Welcome back to the TPM Podcast. I'm Matt, your co-host for the TPM Podcast. We're joined by Chris and Kim from Millkeep. Welcome, guys. How's it going?
It's going great.
Good, man. How you doing?
Good. So I think we'll just start it off. Can you tell me what Millkeep is and a little bit of how you got started?
Sure. So Millkeep really started back in the summer of 2016. I was coming back from a deployment and getting my ATP finished before the rule changeover. And, you know, I was in there with the flight instructor and he said, okay, for your check ride, you're going to need to create a civilian logbook. And I said, hey, I've got these military records. And he goes, well, you know, we account for time differently and you're going to need to do this, which I didn't really know about at all. So went online. I went to TPN, of course.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. And found a bunch of blog articles about it. And really found that there's no, I thought initially just Googling it, we'd find something, you know, pretty quick. And there was no actual system out there that would do all this stuff for you. I mean, people have written articles and there's a lot of discussions about it. And there's Excel spreadsheets out there and stuff. But there was no real, you know, business or company that did it. So after going through, I don't even know how long it took us, Kim, like hours and hours of creating this.
A whole week. Civilian. It was a whole weekend.
Yeah.
It took a whole weekend.
And, you know, Kim was like, you know, there's got to be a better way to do this. And we had been talking for a couple years now about starting a business. And this one seemed like a really good opportunity because it gave us not only like the ability to help out the military like us, but also have something that, you know, provides flexibility in time for when you want to work. And it more importantly provides portability for when you have to move around.
That's what they always say is the best business to start is something that solves a problem that you have.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It builds passion for the project and it sounds like that's exactly what you did essentially.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a big fan of trying to lessen the amount of work that air crew have to do, having been one for, you know, 15 years.
I know firsthand that transitioning from an arms report to a civilian logbook, it really is a line by line, each individual thing. And I initially started doing an Excel spreadsheet is essentially what I did it in. And it was, you'd get lost on each line as you kind of tried to trace across and turn the ones and zeros.
Oh, yeah.
and get them in the right place. And then just the error rate was huge.
Yeah, I mean, I remember my eyes started bleeding after the first like day or so, and I told Kim she had to come down and read them as I typed them, and that went a little bit faster, but it still was painful.
Right. Hey, Kim, more power to you for helping him out. That's pretty impressive. my wife wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole.
Thank you.
Yeah, so can you tell me a little bit more about how Millkeep works and what you're trying, what it is and exactly what someone can expect it to do for them?
Yeah, absolutely. So really what Millkeep does is it takes, like you said, your arms flying history report. And once you scan it into a PDF, because the arms, you know, database deletes all of your records after about 18 months. And that's why we have paper folders. But once you scan it and upload it, it's really a seamless process from there. We do everything else and you'll get, you know, an email saying that everything's finished. You log in and you have pages for a military logbook so that you can see that everything was parsed out and copied over correctly. And then it does all the conversions for you based on a bunch of different settings that you want. And a lot of the really popular ones that people talk about on blog posts are, you know, if I don't know if I was truly the aircraft commander, you know, what do I do? And a lot of guys say, well, just take your total time and take a percentage of that. So you have the ability to choose that on the settings page. A lot of people talk back and forth on if they want to count other time, you know, towards PIC. So you have the ability to take that into account, use it or not use it. So really, it's kind of like a one-stop shop for creating a personalized logbook for anything that you really need. If you want it for an FAA check ride, if you want it for airline apps or pilotcredentials.com, and using that, you know, that's what it's there for. So, but under the hood, so we tried to build it initially so it was all completely seamless to the user. And I think we still have that. What our vision was initially was a completely passive system, right? So it uploads and then with no human component whatsoever, it reads it all and just, it works. We found after, you know, our initial launch, we were using a different set of software, and that did not have the results that we thought that, you know, our customers would want. There were still a bunch of errors in there. We ended up going to a different third-party software, and that's what does a lot of the data capture stuff for it. But we also now add in a human component where people like look through it and actually do another once over to make sure there's no real errors before we upload it into the system for you.
So essentially what the system, the software behind the scenes is doing is optical character recognition, OCR, right? It's taking that PDF that is essentially an image and then somehow translating that into typed text that can go into your platform. Is that essentially?
That's exactly right. And so the reason that it didn't work with our initial system was because we were basically hoping that the OCR that's embedded into like Adobe, that it would be able to read everything exactly and then, you know, spit it out into a database system or into tables. And it turns out, like, if you ever, you know, have a document in Adobe that is not OCR'd correctly, it'll give you the option to do it. And once you have it parse out everything itself, sometimes with older documents or with a resolution that's not very good, it's not going to capture things exactly. And when you're working with stuff where you have tables with a ton of different data cells, if even one of those is off, then it kind of messes up the whole line, or it can mess up, you know, multiple lines. So the combination of kind of poor resolution and Adobe isn't, I mean, they have good OCR, but it's not the best in the world.
Right. When I've played around with that in the past, what I always found is it would combine multiple cells together, thinking it was one term or word or something like that. And then it was just a mm-hmm. nightmare. It was unusable for any sort of calculation purposes or anything.
Exactly.
A lot of the problem stems from the fact that, I don't know, if you look at your ARMS product, a lot of these zeros mm-hmm. have a line through them, mm-hmm. which confuses the system tremendously. If you get a product that's submitted with like a low resolution, or it's an older product, like from 05, or, you know, you've been flying since 03, like Chris, the data capture on those is just really bad. Unless you're sending it at like the highest resolution possible. And even on the product that we're using, which sits on our desktop, it's a piece of software, obviously, that sits on our desktop.
Sure.
Still, that's why we have the human component. We still have to check a lot of those zeros and make sure that they're not coming reading through as eights or sixes or G's. So that's why we had to add that human component, because as good as our product is, the product that we were using before, which was an API, it lived online mm-hmm. in our system. It was even worse. The results were even worse. That's kind of why we had to add that human component into it, to just double check everything and make sure. And as we're running this through, we're checking all the zeros just to make sure that there's nothing wrong, because that can really change your flight totals.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Kim, while you're on that topic, obviously the source document that the client provides you or uploads into the system, mm-hmm. the IFR, the individual flight record, generally what's going to happen is they're going to go to the HARM. They're going to get their green folder and get a 3-inch stack of printed papers and then have to go analog to digital. So what's the best way, what's your recommendation on best practice on how to get a report that you can upload into the system to get the best results?
Well, I would say take out any pages that don't include sortie data. We don't need any of that, mm-hmm. first of all. Secondly, you want to scan it at the highest resolution possible. And usually we like to see, 600 dpi is what gives us the best results. That would be the optimal resolution to submit. And then we strongly recommend that users redact personal information, their social security number, obviously, before they submit it to us. And you can do that in Adobe using, they have like a redaction tool, or you can even erase in Adobe their social security number.
Yeah, to piggyback on that, like Kim said, we'll have people upload, you know, this could be a huge time saver for customers, is people will upload the entire record, right? And it'll come in at like 120 pages. But by the time we sort out the ones that have an individual flight on them, you know, you take out the summary pages and all that kind of stuff, it really comes down to, you know, something in the 30s. You know, that would save like 80 pages or so that a a user doesn't have to actually scan. So I would say, you know, that for number one. And then number two, we found that, you know, like a traditional scanner works a lot better. Now they have the apps where you can take a picture of something and it auto PDFs it. I mean, that works. We've been able to do that with customers in the past, but it just doesn't work as well as the standard traditional scanner.
So like a flatbed scanner or, you know, one of those multifunction printer type of things. Yep. Generally works pretty good.
Yeah, exactly.
You were saying that if you actually take out what I found when I was going through my flight records, like you were saying, there's just tons of pages because they do a printout, you know, routinely. And then there's tons of pages that had information that didn't include individual flight data. It was just maybe a summary page or had other information or biographical information or something like that. So, a lot of those, once I was able to weed out just the pages that mattered, it was far more manageable, but it still ended up being 800, 900 sorties total.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
that held me up for a long time, hand jamming that into an Excel spreadsheet. All right. So you mentioned social security number and redacting that information. One of the questions I had was the IFR report, but it probably says FOUO or official use only or Privacy Act or something like that. Are there any issues with you uploading your own information to your system like that, or do you have any recommendations?
Yeah, so that was our biggest thing that we were kind of nervous about when we initially, you know, started the idea for this business. Was this is FOUO, can we do it? So we talked to so the governing reg for that is the AFI 11421, and that's your ARMS, you know, management system. And there's a paragraph in there that talks about like the reason why your records are FOUO and Privacy Act only, and it's only because of the social security number. So none of the other data is FOUO, you know, by itself. And I've confirmed that with SARM offices. We talked to a Privacy Act attorney, and actually they helped us draft our own privacy policy that users sign when they log in. So no, there's no real issue. And we also have an SSL, you know, encryption certificate for the website. So like when you go in, you'll see it's an HTTPS. It's got the padlock on there to make sure that everything is encrypted and secure. The system doesn't actually save. Once information comes to us and we download it and start working on it, nothing is actually saved out there on our system. So users can be pretty happy with the fact that it's an encrypted site, you know, got all the SSL protocols that you would want to see on it. We don't actually save anything on there in case we do get broken into. Even if all that happened and you didn't redact your info, it's your social security number. So I've always, you know, told Kim, I don't know how many pieces of paper I've signed with my social on it, you know, since starting the Air Force, but it's quite a bit.
Yep.
But just like uploading your info to, you know, a credit card company or something like that, it is your info.
As far as the human component that you guys added in, that's kind of a cool feature. So 90% of this works automatically on its own. It's automated. But how are you doing the checking? Are you guys checking each and every line, or are you monitoring the process and then it gives you some sort of error checking report? Or how does the human component come into that?
Sure. I would say we have several safeguards built into the system. So when we get an IFR, we are designating which areas of that particular page are going to be captured. So there's a human component there, which is designating what areas do we need to capture on this page. Once we recognize the data that's on that page, we're going through and checking, you know, kind of spot checking. Okay, is it getting these zeros accurately? Is this 8 actually reading as an 8, or is it reading as a 6? And the software that we have allows us to do that. It allows us to see how the data is being recognized. So we're spot checking that. And I will say in the beginning, when we were first doing this, we checked every single piece of data line by line for every IFR that we did, just to make sure that we could guarantee a certain level of capture rate. Once we've got that into a CSV file and we're ready to put it back into the system, we have several safeguards built into the system that will notify us if something could potentially be off. For example, like if your total time doesn't add up, that we're notified and we can look into where the problem is. Is primary time off? Is your secondary time, you know, did it not read that correctly? So we have several safeguards built in that allow us to, that notify us if something might be off, and then we can check it further.
And you can investigate and figure out what might have gone wrong. You probably have started to see trends and can kind of know exactly where to go to look at that point.
Yeah, and a lot of times, like I said, it's with the zeros.
Sure.
With those, I don't know why different bases print things differently, but they do. And some of the zeros are fine, and they just look like normal zeros. And some of them have that little line or the dot in the middle, and that just confuses things.
Yeah, when we started down this path, I was like amazed at how unstandardized all the different bases are with what they do. You know, and when I went to ASARM, initially when I was building the aircraft library for this, you know, I got an Excel file, and there was zero management, it seemed like, whatsoever. It seemed like any ARM office could type in whatever kind of MDS code they wanted to make it something. So there's like literally 15 different variants for a C-130E. Mm-hmm. In the MDS library, and all those little zeros with the dot inside of it, you know, sometimes they exist at a base and sometimes they don't. And it's not necessarily like it all changed over in 2000, whatever. It's just based on what base you're at.
And the duty positions.
Yeah. Duty positions.
15 million different duty positions.
A lot more than I used to expect. You know, I was a Charleston guy at one point, and so we had a lot of different duty codes, but yeah, it's not just FP and MP. There's a whole lot of things that follow after it.
Once you start adding in different airframes and those sorts of things.
Absolutely.
That actually brings up a good point is, so right now you're optimized for Air Force flight records, correct?
Yep.
Correct.
Yeah. Do you support, I've seen questions on TPN on whether or not you support other services, Army, Navy, Marine Corps. Have you looked into that? Is that something that's on the roadmap or that you've been able to achieve yet?
Yeah, absolutely. So that is probably the number one question we get is like, hey, when are you going to start doing this for the Navy? When are you going to help out the Army? As much as we kind of knock the Air Force for that, the Navy doesn't actually even have a system that we could pull from. So you can't walk into your Navy office and say, you know, can I have my flight record, please? They do all paper logbooks. Now, I talked to a couple of Navy guys, and there is a fleet-wide program that they have called SHARP, which kind of spits stuff out into an Excel spreadsheet for them. Now, we're working on being able to upload that so that it can parse data out, but just regular handwritten logbooks, unfortunately, we can't help with. The problem with the Navy comes in is they don't have, you know, where we have primary, secondary, other time, they have completely different words, you know, for what they are, different categories for their flight time. So we need to build a whole nother set of algorithms for the actual conversions.
But I would say, Chris, do you agree Navy is the next one that we're targeting, correct?
Yeah, I think of the two, Navy is definitely probably going to come up next if the pilots use the SHARP program.
And that's at their discretion. Is my understanding. Yeah.
From the different aviators that I've talked to that have written to me that it's available fleet wide, but not necessarily everybody is required to use it. So some do and some don't.
Sure. If zeros are variable amongst computer systems, I can't imagine what they are trying to OCR that handwritten.
Oh yeah.
Handwritten OCR.
We initially tried that. We initially, that was our goal initially. We wanted to be able to do a handwritten OCR capture, and it just doesn't exist to the degree that we need the accuracy. It's not available. So, sure.
What kind of accuracy are you guys seeing right now? If you were to upload just an average IFR from a new customer who is doing it for the first time, what can they expect accuracy-wise?
They can expect, you know, greater than 99. We actually haven't had a customer write back yet to say that there was an error. So knock on wood, I think we're at 100%. That being said, from the software component, after it, you know, spits out a CSV file for us to run through, the biggest issue for us are those hole punches, mm-hmm. because they hole punch right over the MDS. Right. So there's definitely the human component of typing in those. But outside of that, I think it's pretty good. We don't do a ton of changes.
I'd say we're at least 98, 99%.
So it really depends on, I mean, if it was a perfect source document that they send you, the results are going to be much, much higher.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and, but if and you have hole punches, I mean, it's impossible for the system necessarily to catch that.
Well, we catch it for them.
Okay.
So for the user, it's seamless, which is kind of what we wanted. So we put a little bit more pain on us, but for the user, like, yeah, the hole punches, they're even if we, you know, when we go through it, when we upload it to the system for one last verification, it pops, it'll highlight a cell red for us if anything is not recognized in the MDS library, and we can make the change really quick. So the user should never see anything like that.
Right. And let me say, like, but for the hole punches in the MDS, mm-hmm. we have gotten a lot of product. If it's like if it's a newer flight history, or if it's at a really, really high resolution, we've gotten a lot of product that has had no errors, you know, even before we did our checks. So it's all dependent on the product that we receive.
So let's assume for a second that you had an upload and then someone panicked and uploaded a second page or found a page that was missing before. Does your system recognize that there are duplicate entries, or that some of the sorties were already captured, or that page was already uploaded? How do you handle that sort of edge case?
Our system highlights any duplicate flight records in yellow. So when the user logs in, if they're reviewing their logbook, they'll see however many yellows that they kind of zero them into, hey, I need to look at this and check it. And then from there, they can either delete those records, or they can, change them or leave them in if they're accurate, and just, you know, it's at their discretion what they want to do with them. But at least they know that they're there.
We do actually, when, you know, a lot of people will have in their record a big Z across a page and say duplicate entries. Anything that the SARM has identified as duplicate, we don't double capture. But
right.
the system will still check things. And initially we thought, hey, we'll have the system automatically take them out for the user, and that, you know, that's a nice thing to have. But actually, we've had a lot of users with like UPT flight instructor experience.
Right, multiple sorties per day. So
multiple mm-hmm. per day, when they all like to fly 1.2s or 1.3s. So we keep them in there, and it's highlighted for the user just to give them SA, and they can say, yep, that's accurate, or it's not, and they can delete it.
Cool. You mentioned that converting time for PIC versus SIC and whether you're aircraft commander and how that translates and percentages and what like that. Do you have any best practices or recommendations? I know there's a lot of techniques out there, but are you able to talk to kind of how that decision-making process is thought through and how you would develop whatever technique you decide to use, and then how you would defend that decision?
Sure. So, shameless plug, I think the best thing to do is, you know, have a good logbook the entire time and use Milkeep for 10 straight years before you decide to get out. And then you can actually delineate there if you were the aircraft commander or not. Outside of that, though, because the ARMS system doesn't actually capture if you were the A code or not on a sortie, we default everything for your record to what's called unknown in the pilot in command column. Users can go in there and they can change it to yes if they knew that they were the aircraft commander for that sortie, or make it no. And that's a really clear-cut delineation on if we want to have them count that as PIC time or not. When they don't and everything is unknown, what most people do, what we've seen, and a lot of people have written articles and stuff about this, is they'll typically range anywhere from 80 to 90% of their time that they've flown since their aircraft commander certification date. And then they'll say, okay, you know, I haven't flown on a whole lot of sorties where I wasn't the aircraft commander, you know, after my AC cert date. So I'm going to count this much time. And it's really a wag. You know, if you have a ton of time, you could probably go down towards the 80% range and make it a lot more conservative. If you're closer, maybe make it 90%, but just make it something that you can talk towards in an interview or at a FAA check ride to say why, you know, you decided to use that specific amount of time. And the system will also allow you to say if you do want to count other time or not. And you can even, you know, make it even more conservative that way. You can say, you know, I used 80% and I'm not even counting my other time towards this when you're talking about PIC.
In what situations would other time actually count as PIC?
Well, for FAA certifications, right? There's no real definition for other time or how it's going to be used. So I would say when you're talking, if you sign the keys for the jet and you're going to be responsible whether you're actually flying or in the plane or not, then you are the pilot in command and you have the ability to log pilot in command time. That's kind of how I feel if I'm responsible for the overall safety of the aircraft. Some people don't necessarily feel that way because they think that they need to be sitting at a set of controls or flying the aircraft, but that's all up to you and how you want to explain something at a FAA check ride or at an airline interview.
Right. And that's probably a more complicated topic that I think has been talked about a lot on TPN. The difference between aircraft commander or the person actually flying the airplane vice instructor time, evaluator time, and PIC. Those are all completely different conversations, and there it gets pretty complicated pretty fast.
But yep.
Bottom line is you have systems in place that you can make those decisions and then tell Melkeep what to do with it, and it gives you a number ultimately at the end, right?
It sure does. There's a totals page on there, and it breaks out everything for you by every individual, you know, primary, secondary time, all that kind of stuff. But then it also has the civilian component as well. So it'll break out your military aircraft time. It'll break out simulator time, RPA time, and then also create civilian aircraft equivalents and then give you those times.
Once everything's updated, you've reviewed all your yellow blocks and duplicates and everything's good and set pilot in command, what's your recommendation for putting that into the next step, say airline apps or pilot credentials or something like that?
There's a drop down in the logbook section. You can go choose if you want to go to airline apps or if you want to go to pilot credentials. And everything is kind of, it's in a template for you. So you can just kind of translate that information over to your airline apps or pilot credentials profile and just add it in right there. It's all set up for you. And it's based on the settings that you already put in when you did your initial sign up. And we're working on potentially adding in some kind of an API that will plug directly into those sites.
Well, great. Well, it sounds like you guys have developed something that could save pilots a ton of time over the course of their application process. And I think that's one thing that has been lacking severely. We took a poll not too long ago on TPN asking what's the biggest pain point in the process. And overwhelmingly, the response was translating your logbook into something that was usable for an airline application or, you know, an ATP FAA check ride or something like that. So sounds like you guys have really put together a great service.
Thank you very much. Yeah, actually, when we were in the middle of building it, you know, we listened to the podcasts and I remember you were doing a podcast with another sponsor now, but you were talking about logbooks and someone needs to create this thing. And, you know, we were like, hopefully someone doesn't try to do this and start competing with us before it's complete.
Yeah. Can I just jump in? Because I don't know if we were clear about this. So pilots can, if they choose to, using Milkeep, they can add recurring flights as they go. They don't have to just do a bulk IFR upload. They have the ability to log an individual flight on their own as they're going. Or they can take a picture and send us their 781 and we will input that data for them. So it's not just total flight history that you have to do. You can add flights as you go along if you want.
So you could start off with an initial IFR history, get current, and then every time you fly or on a weekly basis or something, just update
Absolutely.
Your logbook essentially.
Yeah. Or you can start out with nothing and just start, you know, from UPT, just start adding flights from there if you want.
If I could rewind 12 years, I would love that.
Oh, I know. Because you can save, on our system, you can save so much more data. Like if you were the actual aircraft commander or not, you can save mission numbers and things when you're going back for, you know, air medals or any of those kind of things. And it also, we have a demographics page. You know, you can put in your route of flight and, you know, everyone talks about having that map of everywhere they visited and putting a pin in the map, and that, you know, we actually do it for you right there on the website. And it has countdowns to things, goals that you want to set, like a countdown to getting an ATP or anything like that.
Well, it sounds like you've definitely put thought through a lot of the pain points in the whole process, and I look forward to seeing what the results are over time. So you guys have been TPN members for quite some time yourself, and then just recently decided to become TPN sponsors as well. So on behalf of Adam and myself and the rest of TPN, we just want to say thank you for everything that you're doing for us. Everyone needs to know also that there is a sponsorship relationship between Milkeep and TPN. Really, when it comes down to it, we wanted to work with you because you really are developing something that we thought was valuable. You guys have absolutely the heart of a teacher and interest in teaching people how to work their way through this and helping them along the process. So customer service is a big part of that, and you guys, as far as we can tell, have represented that well. So we just want to say thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah, after we became sponsors with you guys, the response from the crowd has been overwhelming. So we really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Well, great. Well, if anyone wants to reach out and sign up or just ask you some questions, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
Our email is team@milkeep.com, and that's, we check email, whenever we get a notification on our phones. So just shoot us any questions or concerns that you have.
Yeah, www.milkeep.com. Yeah. We also have a Facebook page, a LinkedIn page, so you can pretty much reach us anywhere on social media.
And you're also on TPN Go, the TPN app as well.
So
app.
You can find of course. There.
Yep, absolutely. All right, well, as always, you can reach Adam or I at heyguys@thepilotnetwork.org or visit community.thepilotnetwork.org to log in to TPN Go, which is on iTunes and also on the Android store. So, while you're there, you might as well pick up Milkeep because it's on the app stores as well. So, I want to say one more thank you to you guys, and thanks for listening. We will see you next time.